Sometimes going to the grocery store can be chaotic. There doesn't seem to be enough time to check the list, make sure everything is there, search for the best prices, and take the time to make sure you get the best quality meat. So let ButcherBox help you out. Giving you peace of mind, ButcherBox delivers high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust straight to your door. No grocery carts required. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or hormones, 100% grass-fed, free-range, and crate-free. What more can you ask for? What about free shipping, customized box plans, exclusive member deals, recipe inspirations, tips, and tricks? You really can't go wrong with ButcherBox. Sign up at butcherbox.com/morningcup and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/morningcup and use code morningcup to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Today's podcast is brought to you by Newspapers.com, the ultimate destination for exploring the mysteries of the past. If you're fascinated by true crime, get ready to dive into the stories that made headlines. Newspapers.com offers a billion pages of historical newspapers from the U.S. and beyond, and you can search the entire collection in seconds. Their vast newspaper collection is a goldmine for eyewitness accounts, crime scene photos, news reports, and more. Whether you're interested in famous crimes or long-forgotten cases, Newspapers.com gives you a front-row seat to more than 300 years of history. For our listeners, Newspapers.com has a special offer. Use the code CUPOFMURDER for an exclusive 20% discount on your subscription. That's promo code CUPOFMURDER at Newspapers.com. Sign up today and start unraveling the true crime mysteries that keep you up at night.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird...
Morning.
Cup of murder.
Some adults are in positions of trust, and some choose to abuse that trust and place young people in danger. On April 3, 1994, at 3:35 a.m. in Jefferson County, Wisconsin, Chuck Borhart, a 17-year-old boy, who some sources claim was just 16, was fast asleep in the first-floor bedroom of his home when he heard the sound of a loud bang followed closely by the sounds of moaning. Getting his wits about him and heading towards the living room to see what was going on, Chuck walked through the home and immediately recognized the smell of gunpowder. Following the sounds of the moans, Chuck rushed down the cellar stairs and, at the bottom, found his 40-year-old father, Reuben, slumped across a chair with a gunshot wound to his chest and back. Still conscious but in immense pain, the young boy called 911 and held his father's hand as his life slipped away. As it did, he murmured his last few words, "I can't believe she would do this to me." Immediately, Chuck knew that the she his father was referring to was his 45-year-old wife, Diane. With Reuben being declared dead upon arrival at the hospital, and based on what Chuck told officials, officers entered the home and found that, though several items had been thrown around and the phone line unplugged, which suggested a burglary, nothing of value was reported missing from the home, and the scene was determined to be staged. Immediately, suspicion landed on Chuck, who, despite his young age, was a seasoned hunter and owned the same shotgun that was present at the scene of his father's murder. However, later tested, the ballistics proved that his gun was not the one that fired the deadly bullets, and he was ruled out as a suspect, which left them with Diane, who, according to the sources, had an extremely volatile relationship with the deceased. Also a woman who, having found out about an affair and that her husband wanted to put an end to their relationship, was in the midst of an incredibly aggressive divorce and had recently been ordered by a judge to vacate Reuben's home by April 15, 1994. The couple had, just the day before Reuben's murder, engaged in a fight that resulted in law enforcement being called in. claiming her soon-to-be ex-husband hit her, officers suggested that she find somewhere else to stay for the night. And Diane, storming out of the house, found a place to stay about 200 miles away. Considering the distance, Diane was ruled out as a suspect. And with no persons of interest left and no real evidence, the case began growing cold. A reward was announced, and 5 months later, an anonymous tip was called in that not only ignited the case once again, but gave them a prime suspect who they could finally arrest. According to this tip, though Diane Borhardt was 200 miles away the night of the murder, prior to her husband's death, she allegedly tried to recruit the caller to, in exchange for her two wedding rings, $20,000 in cash from insurance, and two vehicles, kill Reuben Borhardt. Though the caller said that they did not take Diane up on her offer, they said that a man named Douglas Vest Jr. might just have. Now, prior to becoming a suspect in her husband's murder, Diane, a former teacher's aide and study hall monitor at Jefferson High School, was described as a kind woman who was always sympathetic to her students and their struggles. Though the small town knew about the messy divorce, no one ever suspected that this woman could be capable of such malice. Arrested on September 29, 1994, and charged with first-degree intentional homicide, the arrest of Douglas Vest Jr., a 17-year-old who was recently voted the, quote, sweetest boy at the high school, Joshua Yankee, a 16-year-old member of the school choir, and Michael Maldonado, Douglas's 15-year-old cousin and school dropout, came soon after and shocked every single resident of Jefferson County. Based on their statements, this is what happened between Diane, Reuben, Douglas, Joshua, and Michael. In February of 1979, Reuben's first wife, Susan, died in a traffic accident and left him with two small children to raise on his own. Shortly after her death, the grieving widower, working as a foreman at Schweiger's Industries, began seeing the company's secretary, Diane Pfister, who was a recent divorcee. Just 8 months after losing his wife, Reuben and Diane were married, and less than a year later, they welcomed their first child together into the world. Almost immediately, the pair's relationship began to fall apart, and speaking with the media, Reuben's young daughter said she remembered, while in third grade, wishing her father and stepmother would divorce instead of argue constantly, with loved ones claiming the pair were complete opposites and that Diane was very, quote, anti-Susan. Reuben's new wife became incredibly possessive and even tried to hide from his children that she was not their natural mother. Growing furious whenever people would tell the children that they looked like their mother, Diane was an incredibly jealous woman who seemed to pick fights with her husband whenever possible. Though he spent years trying to avoid conflict and urged his children to respect Diane to ensure domestic tranquility, Reuben met a local woman in her 30s and began an affair with the homemaker. When Diane got suspicious, she allegedly asked some of her students to spy on the pair and report back to her what they saw. Eventually, in January of 1994, Reuben came to a breaking point and finally filed for divorce. While they waited for everything to be finalized and for the custodial matters to be settled, he moved into the basement of his own home while Diane refused to leave and demanded custody of her now teenage stepson. Fights got worse, everyone pleaded with Diane to get counseling, and eventually, things got so bad that Reuben's daughter, Brooke, moved into a friend's home to get away from all the turmoil. Reuben, threatened often by his wife, was so scared for his safety that he began lining up empty mayonnaise jars in the hallway leading to the cellar doors so he could be alerted if someone tried to sneak up on him. Things reached an all-time high when Reuben won custody of Chuck and Diane was told to vacate the home by April 15th. Though Reuben seemed pleased, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel and excited to start this new chapter of his life, students at the local high school began noticing a change in Diane. Though most knew about the divorce and were sympathetic, only Douglas Vest knew the true depths of his teacher's anger. Allegedly contacting the boy, quote, 3, 4, or 5 times, claiming she needed his help getting rid of her husband, Diane told him that Reuben physically abused her and, in a whispered conversation during study hall, said the divorce would leave her with absolutely nothing. Promising the $20,000, her rings, and the cars, when speaking with a Jefferson student's mother, reports claim that she picked the most vulnerable children she could and that, quote, every one of them had a single parent or some problem in their life. Douglas Vest Jr. eventually agreed to do as the teacher asked, was given a $600 down payment, and recruited Josh Yankee, a boy who was described as, quote, very shy, a chicken. He stutters a lot when he's scared. Adding Michael Maldonado to the mix, the plan was set into motion just 13 days before Diane was forced to vacate Reuben's home. According to his daughter, Reuben sensed that something was wrong on April 2nd, when Diane, who was never close to Susan's mother, traveled the 200 miles to go visit with his deceased wife's family, and, odder still, took along her 2 small dogs. Dogs who she never took on a trip, but who would bark like crazy whenever someone entered their home. According to his police statement, Douglas and Michael, purchasing a shotgun, entered Reuben's home in the early morning hours of April 3rd and broke into the first floor just as their target, in his underwear, came walking up the cellar stairs. Shooting him as he stood at the top of the steps, Reuben stumbled backwards to try and get away just as another shot was fired that sent him tumbling down the stairs. They managed to escape just as Chuck woke and went searching for the source of the sounds that he heard. During her trial, Diane maintained her innocence, but was proven wrong when another student, 19-year-old Shannon Johnson, testified to seeing her negotiate with Doug prior to the murder and hand over some cash and a map. Reuben's cousin, Tim Quintero, also testified against her and claimed that Diane approached him with the same offer and handed over a hand-drawn map, which handwriting experts analyzed and determined that both this map and the one given to Doug were a match. Convicted on the grounds of conspiracy to commit first-degree intentional homicide and conspiring with underage teens to commit murder, Diane was sentenced to life imprisonment and will not be eligible for parole until 2040. Joshua Yankee was sentenced to 18 years in prison and was paroled in 2006, while both Douglas Vest and Michael Maldonado were convicted of first-degree intentional homicide and sentenced to life in prison. Shannon, who witnessed the exchange, was sentenced to 80 days in jail and 2 years of probation for committing perjury and threatening Douglas Vest. In 1998, it was reported that Diane was denied a new trial by the Court of Appeals, and according to the article, she remains steadfast in her innocence and claims she had ineffective counsel during her trial. As far as I can tell, she remains behind bars. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder. Please join me again tomorrow to hear a terrible thing happened on April 4th. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there's always Patreon or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.